The month of June has been hijacked by the anti-Christian culture to show their pride in something God calls an abomination. When you support AFR, you help us continue to stand for godly values and provide the resources for you to stay in the know about the enemy's tactics. To say thank you for your gift this month, we'll give you the booklet, Inside the LGBTQ Push of the 1990s, to help strengthen your convictions. Just go to afr.net/offers. afr.net/offers. We inform.
Religious freedom is about people of faith being able to live out their faith, live out their convictions, no matter where they are.
We equip.
Sacred honor is the courage to speak truth, to live out your free speech.
We also rejoice in our sufferings because we know that suffering produces perseverance, perseverance, character, and character, hope.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio.
It's my turn.
Here is your host for My Turn, Don Wildman.
As he said this, he spat on the ground and made clay of the spittle and anointed the man's eyes with the clay, saying to him, Go, wash in the pool of Siloam, which means sent. So he went and washed and came back seeing. The Pool of Siloam is to be found in the southeastern section of Jerusalem. Today, it is outside the walls around the old city. In the time of Christ, it was inside the city walls. In fact, it was the water source for the city in time of attack. King Hezekiah, seeking a water source for use by the city under attack, cut a tunnel some 1,750 feet from the spring of Gihon to the pool. The tunnel was cut through solid rock in order to bring water inside the city walls. The tunnel was one of the most amazing engineering feats for water supply in the biblical period. Two groups of workmen began at opposite ends and worked toward the center. Using handpicks, the two groups dug in a zigzag pattern. The pattern resulted in a tunnel 1,750 feet in length.
Hey, folks, welcome to At the Core with Walker Wildman and Rick Green. I'm Rick Green, America's Constitution Coach. Appreciate you joining me on this Monday. I'm filling in for Walker today. And, in fact, you're going to have to put up with me a lot this week. Looking forward to a great week of programming. And, man, there's so much to cover. And, of course, top of the mind for everybody right now is the whole Iran situation and what's happening. You know, how far will we go? Is it constitutional what President Trump has done? What's the role of Congress? I mean, we got a lot of big questions to answer. And we're going to dive into several of those things today. I definitely think we have to start with the big picture and kind of the temperature of the American people for this kind of thing right now. There's definitely a lot of pushback. Fully understandable. I totally get the hesitation about being embroiled in anything. Walker and I talked about this when we were doing the program together last week. Just the kind of on the heels of not on the heels in the middle of the Ukraine situation and on the heels of a lack of faith in the American system, in the institutions. I mean, look, people have, we've been lied to so much over the last few years and then discovered things that we were lied to about decades and decades ago. And it's just created this lack of trust, this lack of faith that the institutions and the politicians have the nation's best interest at heart. And some people even are so cynical now that they don't believe there's any such thing, that there would never be a politician with the nation's best interest at heart. I am not that cynical. I absolutely believe, I know a good people in office that have been willing to put the country first. I mean, we've had generations of people that have lived out that line in America the Beautiful, more than self-country loved. I mean, that is the patriotism of and the American mindset that made America the greatest nation in history, and that we saw enough of that in each generation to keep the torch alive. So I do not share the cynicism that doesn't exist at all. I absolutely share the concern at the level of rot and corruption that has unfortunately become the norm. It's actually the exception to the rule to find those people that will put the country first more than self. And of course, we saw the opposite of this with the Biden administration. We talked about that a lot on the program, just the examples of putting people, self-interest and power and money and all of those things for the individual above the country. The Biden family is exhibit A for that, not only with all of Hunter's stuff, but with the payoffs to the man, Joe, and the uncle and all the rest. So that's kind of because we just went through that. I think that's why you have so many people that just have no appetite for this whatsoever. So they're looking for anything that they can latch on to and say, this shouldn't be happening. And of course, the immediate reaction Saturday night was, this is unconstitutional. The president cannot do this on his own. Only Congress can declare war. This is wrong. I have to address that, first of all, from the standpoint of what's constitutional. And then we'll look at it historically. And then we can talk more about whether or not the president should, even if it's constitutional and even if there is a historical precedent for it. So that'll be kind of our walkthrough of that particular topic. And that's probably going to take most of the program today. And of course, I want to hear from you. 888-589-8840. 888-589-8840 is the phone number. But let me just start with the constitutionality. Okay, so quick primer on where these clauses are in the Constitution and why this isn't crystal clear. I don't mean that there's no guidance. I don't mean that there's nothing to give us guidelines on where the line is drawn. It's not that. It's just that it's not a clearly defined absolute in every situation. This is what has to happen. That's not how it works. Okay. There's a little bit of a dance here that is done in order to leave the ultimate power of declaring war with the Congress, but still allow for the president to execute the laws and to execute the safety, execute the actions that are necessary to keep the nation safe. And so there's two clauses that we're dealing with specifically. Article 1, Section 8, Congress has the power to declare war. We know that. That's what everybody's talking about this weekend. But the president, under Article 2, Section 2, is the commander-in-chief, and he's the one that actually has the authority over the military and actually executes any kind of a military action. And not every military action is what you would consider a declaration of war, or meaning that we're involved in an ongoing war. And there's a ton of examples of this. And I mean, we can go all the way back to the Founding Fathers. We can look at Washington and Adams and Jefferson with the Barbary Powers Wars. We can look at, fast forward from there all the way to Ronald Reagan and Grenada. You can look at Barack Obama and Libya and multiple examples. In so many of these examples, the president took action that the president believed in their discretion was necessary for our national security interest and for the safety of the American people and for our allies. And so that is absolutely constitutional for them to do. Now, what Congress has tried to do is get a little bit of a better definition on this. And so 50 years ago, In the 70s, we passed the War Powers Act, and it defines more of what the presidential powers are with regard to waging war or military action. And there's some specific requirements in that, and you've probably read some of that on social media and what people have talked about. You got to notify Congress within 48 hours of an action that's been taken. You got basically 60 days to get Congress's approval to do more. And then, you can get an extension of 30 days. All of that's based on a congressional act. I have a hard time saying that constitutionally that would even be upheld, because you can't modify the Constitution with a congressional act. You have to have an actual amendment to the Constitution. So if Congress passes it with 2/3 and then sends it to the states and they ratify, then, okay, that's different. But, we're talking about a congressional act here. And so it's more, in my opinion, it's a guideline that we have, tried to abide by. Obama did not. I mean, he went way past the 60 days with Libya and there's other examples like that. And then, of course, even frankly, all of the major conflicts the last 60 years were without what most people think of as a formal declaration of war. World War II would be the last time that we actually had that. So, I mean, you go back to Korea, you go back to Vietnam, the Desert Storm, I mean, all of it. I'm actually going to go, some people may not like this, but I'm going to say I'm okay with that. I don't think that you should, I don't think it should just be because some might argue, well, it's just an immediate, imminent danger act. Yes, of course, we want the president power to do that. But then very quickly, it should be handed over to Congress to make a decision. I think it's got to go a little further than that. I think the president's got to have some extended leeway to handle an extended situation. And you know, it's going to be harder to get Congress. You get a majority of this crowd to agree on anything, and it's a miracle. And I understand somebody's going to call in and say, well, that's what you want. You want it to be a majority of Congress before we put our men and women in harm's way. And to some extent, I agree with that. But on the other hand, I got to say, I mean, look, you sign up to defend the country and you understand that the president is your commander in chief. And there is no doubt that there have been presidents that have been terrible at this and lousy at this, and they've cost American lives because of the decisions that they made when it did not benefit the country. So I'm not saying there is not abuse or ineptitude or any of that. That is true. But that's part of living in a free society and having a civilian commander in chief. And that's, you know, part of why elections and all those things matter so much. And part of why when we vote, we have to be thinking about these very things, not just what somebody's going to do for our local community and bringing home the bacon and paying for the local library and all that kind of stuff. You got to realize these are life and death situations. The Bible's right. The government does not bear the sword in vain. So all of that set up to essentially say President Trump did exactly what he is constitutionally allowed to do. He had the constitutional authority to do it. He had absolutely the historical precedent, and plenty of you know, almost every president has done something like that. And then you get to whether or not it is a, you know, was it the smart thing to do? Was it the proper thing to do? And, you know, look, I don't have all the intel, obviously. I'm not on the inside. I'm just looking at this just like you are on Monday morning quarterbacking. And, you know, the things that we've been told so far sound to me like, absolutely, he was justified in doing it and needed to do it. If it turns out that some of that intel was bad, maybe the Iranians weren't as close to a nuclear bomb as our intelligence said they were. But I mean, I may be wrong on this, but from what I've read, what I've seen, what everybody's pretty well not disputed is that they were way past the level of any kind of civilian power need in terms of the enrichment. And I don't understand the science on all this. I mean, I heard the numbers, you know, they were at 60%. There's no need to be at that, and not that far away from being at 90%. I don't know if that's true or not in terms of whether or not it's what it takes to go from 60 to 90. I'm just telling you, based on what the reports are, that apparently it was very clear that they were trying to build a nuclear bomb, not trying to provide nuclear power for their people. And now, of course, you're hearing from this Russian that is saying, you know, that people are going to help them get a nuclear bomb, and that they're going to continue to do what they were already doing. I mean, essentially admits that's what they were after. And of course, that's the only reason to have it, you know, underground the way they did. I mean, I think the facts will bear out that they were absolutely trying to create a nuclear bomb. Everybody on the planet knows if they get the nuclear bomb, they're dropping it on Israel, and they're going to try to find a way to get it to the United States. They hate us. They hate them. They've verbally said they want to destroy both and wipe them from the face of the planet. So if they get a nuclear bomb, they will absolutely use it, which is why every president of the last 50 years has said, we got to make sure they don't get a nuclear bomb. It's just none of them were willing to do what President Trump just did. And so I think that is, you know, we have to look at it from that perspective, that if the intelligence convinced President Trump that he had to do this now in order to prevent them from being able to get the nuclear bombs, at the end of the day, we're all going to say thank you. Thank you, President Trump, for doing that. I will say, man, that press conference, I don't know if I, not in my lifetime, have I heard a president be that that real and raw with regard to the love of God. I mean, that was not some staged comment. You could see the emotion in his face and hear it in his voice. You know, David Barton said today on Wall Builders, he was talking about how that's it's almost like that overflowing from the heart of a baby Christian kind of thing. It was really, that part was powerful. And then the fact that he said, you know, no other military on the planet could have done this. I mean, that was essentially a message to the rest of the world. You're on notice. You know, don't put Americans in harm. Do not harm the American people. We have the ability to strike back. Well, we'll dive more into this. Would love to hear what you think. 888-589-8840 is the phone number. 888-589-8840. I'm Rick Green, America's Constitution Coach. I'm filling in for Walker Wildman today. Iran, obviously, will be the hot topic of the day. We may try to get to some other things as well. But if you'd like to call in and be a part of it, 888-589-8840. Stay with us here on At the Core.
At the Core podcasts are available at AFR.net. Now, back to At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome back to At the Core with Walker Wildman and Rick Green. I'm Rick Green, America's Constitution Coach, filling in for Walker on this Monday. Of course, our normal routine is for Walker to be with you Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and I'm with you on Tuesdays and Thursdays. But this week, I'm going to be covering for Walker today, and then I'll do my regular show tomorrow, cover for Walker on Wednesday, and then my regular show on Thursday, and Walker back with you on Friday. So a lot going on out there. Of course, the main focus is on Iran right now. It's not the only news. The rest of life goes on as well, and I think that's part of the difference between declaring war and being at war, like a World War II, where it consumes the entire nation, everything we're doing. I mean, we're literally converting our industries into, you know, being able to support the war effort. I mean, just the whole focus of the whole country is war. This is part of what David Barton was explaining to me today. You know, that's when you absolutely need a congressional declaration of war, because you're essentially shifting the entire nation's all into an all-in status with war. Whereas what we're going to, you know, be dealing with here with Iran, even not that different from the war against radical Islamic terrorism and you know, some of the other conflicts of the last few decades, it is definitely all in, all consuming for the people that are having to fight it, no doubt about that, and for, you know, a lot of our government entities and employees and public officials. But not so much for the rest of the nation, and take that as you know, good and bad in that, right? But it isn't an all-consuming thing. They're literally going to do what they signed up to do, and what they're good at. And you talk to most of the military guys I know, they're like, please unleash us, you know, let us go do what we signed up to do. And in many cases, like I know most of the guys I know that are especially in the, you know, special operations world. They would love to be unleashed on the cartels, for instance, in Mexico. In fact, make that their training drills, to just go down there and wipe out some of these cartel operatives. You know, that for them, that is not a burden. That's actually what they are called to do. They're literally that Psalms, I believe it's 144, about, you know, he makes my fingers for war and teaches my fingers to fight. I mean, that's what they're designed for. But the legal aspect of this, the you know, battle between the president and Congress on who has the authority to do this. I know there's some members of Congress that, frankly, some of that I greatly respect. I mean, I like Thomas Massie, and he's the loudest voice right now saying this is unconstitutional. I disagree with him on that completely. I disagreed with Ron Paul back during, you know, during the war against radical Islamic terrorism. He was saying we never declared war, and that therefore the president could not do what he was doing. My argument at that time was, look, if Congress passes an appropriations bill funding a military effort, especially if they're passing that bill after action has already been taken, we're already in the field or we're already moving that direction, and Congress turns around and continues to fund that effort and doesn't pass some sort of either resolution, at least, let alone an act of some kind to withdraw funding from that sort of thing, I don't see that as any different than a formal, you know, passing a resolution that says that it's at the top of the page, it says declaration of war. I just don't think, I mean, the Constitution certainly doesn't call for a particular form or method of declaring war. It just says, in fact, let me just read it right out of Article 1, Section 8. It just simply says Congress shall have the power to declare war. Now, it's a little longer sentence than that, but that's the relevant portion. Congress shall have power, and then you go through a bunch of the land collect taxes stuff. Then you get down to this one, to declare war, comma, grant letters of mark and reprisal, comma, and make rules concerning captures on land and water to raise and support armies, but no appropriation of money to that use shall be longer than for 2 years, which is, you know, essentially why they constantly have these redoing the appropriations for them. My point is, and by the way, Mark and Reprisal is essentially like sort of like a hit squad. I mean, it's basically saying go take out that dude or that particular area. Congress could literally, you know, pass a resolution or an act calling for that to be done. But it doesn't say, I mean, think about what it just said. To declare war is the only, is three words. That's the only relevant portion there. Doesn't say how, doesn't say what the vote majority has to be. Is it a two-thirds or three-fourths or simple majority? Doesn't say, you know, has to be delivered to the president within 10 days. None of that. It just simply says to declare war. And so then you got to say, what do they mean by that? And how is that to be executed? How is that to be done? And the historical precedent is pretty clear. I mean, think about it. If you had Washington, Adams, and Jefferson dealing with the Barbary powers, dealing with these pirates, basically, from these four Muslim countries that were capturing our sailors, capturing any American they could, and ransoming them back to America. And it's the whole reason we developed the Navy. It's why we had to go that direction. And it's the reason the Marines have in their Marine Corps hymn, "To the Shores of Tripoli." It goes back to those first few fights. So, I mean, whether you go to the founders doing that or you fast forward to more modern era and them still doing those things without congressional quote-unquote declaration of war, you got to say this is the way we've operated from the beginning. Now, I had somebody ask me today, you know, but is that good? Is that, you know, wouldn't we want to avoid a tyrant, avoid a president that's just warmongering and just hungry for blood and just wants to be in a fight all the time or just wants to show off and show their strength and or, you know, the wag the dog thing where they're going to drop bombs just to distract from whatever scandal they're fighting, Clinton, you know, but whatever. I get that question, you know, that you don't want too much power in one person's hands. But I'm convinced that the checks and balances work and that if you have a president that gets that far out of hand, Congress does have the means to rein them in. They can defund. They can pass specific actions calling on the president to do certain things or to not do certain things or you know, if they really think it's that bad, and I know Democrats are already screaming impeachment, but they could try that. They could do that. Now, granted, it's got to be an actual impeachable offense. There's absolutely nothing the president's done here that you could even come close to saying is an impeachable offense. So I don't think we're out of balance at all. I think the system, as designed by the founders and as implemented over the last, you know, 238 years of the Constitution itself. Or 236 years of the Constitution. I'm so stuck on 250 for the Declaration coming up. I always have to count backwards. But anyway, we've had over 200 years of it working pretty well, probably better than any in the world, and the ability to keep that one person from getting completely out of hand, but making sure they have the freedom and the ability and the mobility. What's the word I'm looking for? Being nimble enough to respond quickly in a situation like what we're dealing with right now and to be able to have a clear voice and command, right? That's why they did not make Congress in charge of the military and commander-in-chief. You don't want to run the military by committee. You need that one person that is giving the final say on yes, send in the bombs, or yes, send in the troops, or, you know, no, we're not going to go. It's not, this will not end well. I mean, think about Reagan's ability to say, yes, we're going to go in Grenada. We're going to make that happen. But also then to make the decision. And if I had been, I mean, I was a kid at the time, so I couldn't process it. But when Beirut happened and all those Marines were killed, look, if I'd been president at that time, I might not have had the restraint that President Reagan did. I might have dropped a lot of bombs on a lot of folks as a result of that. But for President Reagan, the decision was, no, we're getting out of here and we're going to withdraw. And this is no longer in America's national interest. That's the president's job to make that decision. And if people don't like it, that's one reason the president only serves for 4 years. so that you can hold them accountable. If you get into a Vietnam situation, you have an election within 2 years or 3 years, or, you know, at the most, at the absolute most, if they get right into it right when they get elected, at the most 4 years to be able to make sure that it's not a 20-year conflict. If you don't want it to be, then you unelect that president. You put somebody else in office that isn't supporting that particular action. So anyway, I know I'm rambling a bit, but I think we have to have some faith, not so much in the people generally or the institutions generally, but some faith in the design, in what Jefferson said in the Declaration, organizing its powers in such forms as shall seem to them the most likely to affect their safety and happiness. That's right out of the Declaration. So he's talking about when you create a government, he said you lay its foundation on such principles and organize its powers in such forms as shall seem to them the most likely to affect their safety and happiness. And so for us, right now we're talking about how those powers are organized. And is it organized, or are they organized in a way that most beneficially is most beneficial to our safety and happiness, to the protection of our nation, our borders, our ability to protect our interests around the world, to help our allies, and our happiness. That it's not to the point that we're in these forever wars where our sons and our grandsons are being sent off to die for reasons that we don't support. And so that safety and happiness line actually really does apply here. And I am just absolutely convinced at this point that President Trump is not George Bush. He's not Lyndon Johnson. He's not going to get us into a situation where we cannot extract ourselves for 10, 15, 20 years. He has proven himself to not support that. And he has proven himself to have a good instinct on being able to know when to go in, when to push, when to pull, how far to go. And so I think we talked about this last Tuesday when Walker and I were together, is just, you know, trusting the guy in the room and giving some grace and giving some leeway here, and not forever. I mean, you know, we're going to call balls and strikes here at the core. We're going to, if we feel like, whoa, that's way more than what we thought was necessary, or, you know, I think President Trump is going to start losing a whole lot of support if he continues. You know, we'll call that. We'll say that. I don't think we're there at all. I think we're at the stage in the game where President Trump's the guy we've hired. He's the quarterback, and we're not Monday morning quarterbacking yet. We're actually saying this fits within his constitutional authority. This fits within historical precedent. There is a very, very good argument based on what we know that this did in fact protect American interests, that this was necessary to prevent a nuclear power for Iran and their ability to just completely wipe off the face of the earth our ally Israel, but also to attack in all kinds of ways that we can't even fathom our American interests around the world and even America here. I mean, come on, folks. Do you not think that if Iran has nuclear power ability, that they would not find a way to attack America as well, not just Israel? They've told us that. And so this, I think the president has every right to do what he did. I don't think that. The Constitution is very clear about that. History is very clear about that. He absolutely had every right to do what he did and what he's doing. And I frankly am in support of trusting him to make those decisions based on the intelligence that he's being given every day and based on his instincts about what's right. Because even if, you know, this some people think that in politics and at this level of leadership, that there is an absolutely right decision to be made in every situation. It's not true. A lot of this is gray. A lot of this is muddy. Let's say you don't go in. You choose not to tell them to go take out the facilities. And then the facilities turn out to be further along than we thought. And they end up with a nuclear bomb a month from now. And somehow they sneak it across the border into the U.S. Or they wipe Israel off the face of the planet. And you had the ability to send in the bunker busters and you didn't. I mean, you see where I'm going with that? I mean, like, there's not a clear-cut, perfect decision. So there has to be some instinct here. And there also has to be, man, there has to be some supernatural intervention. There has to be. This is why we pray for our leaders. We're commanded to pray for our leaders. It's a scriptural command for us to do that. And just from a practical perspective, don't you want the president to have some level of inspiration from the Lord? I mean, I remember George W. Bush, even though he's the wrong example for when to get out and that sort of thing. But I remember him talking about, I don't see how anybody could do this job without being covered in prayer. Because and what he meant by that is these are impossible decisions to make on a daily basis. It's difficult to imagine the weight of the decisions that are being made. So this is why it's important to continue to pray. It's why I'm thankful that the faith office has been elevated to the level that it has, so that all of those people that are in that faith office can be not just praying, but be involved at a level of knowledge and proximity to the decisions that are being made. That is critical, and I think this is a White House that has more of that than maybe any White House in history, and certainly more than any in my lifetime. And that gives me some comfort to know that they are being bathed in prayer, and that people are literally praying from within the White House. So I think that's an important part for us to remember. And so I would encourage you at home, make that a part of your daily prayers right now, because these decisions that are being made are obviously life or death. And, you know, Iran's, you know, obviously sounds like, you know, going to drag this out and try to retaliate and do all these different things. And I don't know how President Trump could have made it any more clear that any attempts and any actual retaliation like that is going to be met with overwhelming force. And I think that's the right call as well, not to just do surgical strikes, but that if they strike back and we lose life at all or any of our interests are damaged, man, it's overwhelming force that President Trump will definitely respond with. So anyway, that's the constitutional and the historical perspective on it. When we come back from the break, we'll take your calls, 888-589-8840. What are your thoughts on this? And tell us how you're praying. Like, what's your, give us some ideas on specific things to pray, not only for President Trump, but Pete Hegseth, the pilots, everybody involved, and for Israel's leadership as well, and pray for the American people. I mean, all of those things. Love to hear your thoughts on all of that. 888-589-8840 is the phone number. Yes, you're hearing Rick Green's voice, not Walker Wildman, even though it's Monday, normally Walker's day, but I'm filling in for Walker today, and would love to hear from you about what you think about all of these different news items. One more time on the phone number, 888-589-8840. Very quick break. We'll be back in a moment. You're listening to At the Core. You know, there was a recent study of post-abortive women, and 60% of them reported that they would have preferred to give birth if they had received more support from others or had more financial security. That's where Preborn steps in. Preborn is there for women in their darkest hour, deciding between the life and death of their precious child. You see, the reality is women are being pressured to make this fatal decision and are being told that their babies are just a clump of cells. They're being lied to, folks. Preborn welcomes women with God's love and introduces them to the beautiful life growing inside of them. That doubles their baby's chance at life. When you support Preborn, you're not only supporting women, you're empowering them. Your donation of $28 will help a woman make a choice that she won't have to regret for the rest of her life, and it gives her the ultimate blessing, life. You can save a life. Just dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 and then baby, or visit preborn.com. That's preborn.com.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio with your host, Walker Wildman.
Welcome back to At the Core with Walker Wildman and Rick Green. I'm Rick Green, America's Constitution Coach, filling in for Walker Wildman today. And we're talking about Iran, of course, and the constitutionality of President Trump's actions, and then just the wisdom of it, yay or nay, and of course, different opinions out there, and made my position pretty clear about trusting the guy in the room at this moment. But let's see what you guys think. Let's go to Louisiana. How about Alan in Louisiana? You're first up today, Alan. Go ahead, man.
How are you today? Shalom, shalom.
I'm doing
shalom.
Great. Thanks for calling in.
My question, I'm not sure about this. Wasn't it Obama who allocated, what, was it $75 million to Iran yearly? or was it 75 billion? I'm not.
It was
really
billion.
Sure about
it
that.
Was in the billions. I don't remember the exact number, but yeah, no, you put your finger on it. I mean, this, the problem is exacerbated today from even 15 years ago because, you know, Obama made that, you know, terrible deal that essentially propped up Iran, allowed them to make more money and gave them money. And then, you know, Trump put a stop to that when he came in, and it was on, you know, for 4 years essentially on hold. And then Biden, of course, opens the floodgates again and allows them to be financed in a way that, you know, they were getting close to the breaking point. I mean, they were getting to the point where they could have an uprising and potentially be free again. But, you know, unfortunately, Obama and Biden both, you know, were terrible on this issue. So they kind of helped create the situation we're in now by enabling the Iranians. Alan, great point, man. Absolutely great point. Thanks for calling in. Let's see. Let's go over to Brandon in Texas. Brandon, you're up next. Go ahead. And by the way, anybody else want to call in? 888-589-8840. Jerry, you'll be up next. Go ahead, Brandon.
Hello. Our church loves AFA, and we love wall builders. Thank you for everything you're doing.
You bet. Thank you.
Yeah, just a quick comment. In the first term of President Ronald Reagan, Israel bombed Iraq's nuclear program, and I saw a documentary on that, and there was a Christian general that was in Reagan's National Security Council to talk about what to do about it. And this Christian general turned to President Reagan and said, "Mr. President, one day our nation is going to be thanking God that Israel did this, and he's gone on to heaven. But I'm pretty sure if he was here, he'd say, Mr. President, one day we're going to be thanking God that Israel did this."
Well, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, this is, you know, it's interesting. I don't think you can find anybody out there that's considered anywhere close to being an ally of ours that would not agree that Iran cannot, should not get nuclear weapons. I mean, other than maybe Russia and China, like that's the only, and of course some, you know, radical Islamic countries, but. So, you know, everybody has always said this. They shouldn't be able to get them. They can't get them. And so you're right. When Israel goes in and takes them out, we have to be thanking them. And I think at this point, our, you know, the necessity of us being able to go in with the bunker buster. And I don't know if that I'm not an expert on this, so I don't know if all of this is true. But definitely the line in Washington has been that Israel absolutely did not have the ability to go that far down and get through the bunkers in order to take it out, that only our you know, bunker busters could do that, and that's why we had to be involved at this point. Assuming that is true, that, you know, it makes sense, but that's certainly what they're saying. Jerry in Texas, go ahead, Jerry, you're up next.
Hey, brother, just my perspective on, you know, the left losing their minds over the retaliation in the Middle East. I think it's Qatar. That was basically a failure on Iran's part. So
yeah.
After 20 years in the military, two tours in Iraq, being in Qatar on the way through for another mission, those guys and gals, those troops, those defenders of freedom for this country are totally prepared for anything in that region. They're briefed daily, if not hourly. They have the contingency plan. It would be unwise to assume that this was not expected. And it would be unwise for anybody. I don't care if they're Republican. I don't care if they're Democrat. I don't care if they say they're conservative. To think that the capabilities of the United States military wasn't expecting such a thing, and then listen to low information people, Rocket, that says they weren't hollered at. They shouldn't be hollered at. That's a separation of powers. That's my opinion. I'm gonna let you talk, brother.
Oh, good point, Jerry. Thank you for calling in, man. Yeah, and you could just tell by, you know, Jerry's tone and attitude that you know, again, our men and women in uniform sign up for this stuff. It's not like they're, you know, wanting to avoid at all costs. They're saying, of course, we're not war hungry. We're not just begging for a fight. But we train to be able to fight if necessary. And that is the whole be dangerous mindset that we talk about at Patriot Academy. It's actually the main point of Victor Marx's book, The Dangerous Gentleman. It's you have to have the ability to be dangerous. You have to have the ability to be lethal. in order to be a gentleman and actually protect people. And thankfully, our military has that mindset and that attitude for sure. All right, Esther in Kansas, you're next up. Esther, and the phone number is 888-589-8840. Esther, go ahead.
Oh, hello, and what a wonderful show. I love you. And I love the show. But I'm wondering if you had an opportunity to hear Caroline Leavitt in her press conference, because she addressed this issue quite animatedly and quite adamantly, and that they put in a good deal of time trying to reach everyone in Congress. What they had trouble reaching Macy and Schumer, but they reached everybody else, and they tried those two several times. She was so animated about that.
I did not see it. No, I have not. I'm still playing catch up on all this stuff that happened over the weekend. I was traveling, and Saturday night, in fact, I landed at the airport, and all the my phone's blowing up, and made a quick video from the airport just talking about some of these constitutional issues and the history of this thing, because so many people were saying it was unconstitutional. But I did not see Leavitt's press conference on that, and wouldn't surprise me if they did reach out and couldn't get a hold of them. But they certainly were not required to before the fact. I think my understanding is that Johnson and maybe one other were the only ones that they did actually talk to before Saturday night when it happened, but maybe she was talking about within the 48-hour period after it happened, which is required by that War Powers Act, which technically they have until tonight even for that to happen. But yeah, interesting. Thank you for that call. Okay, let's see. Deborah in North Carolina. Going to North Carolina next. Deborah, you're up.
Yes, sir. I was just wondering, are we going to have some type of retaliation? And if so, what type of retaliation? And how should we pray against that?
I think it's a great question. And I think we have to pray that any sleeper cells in the United States that came across the border over the last 4 years when it was open by the previous president being so foolish about that. But if pray that any of these sleeper cells, that their plans will be thwarted, that there'll be supernatural intervention to prevent them from having the weapons, or to allow for them to be discovered, that they will be stopped before they can wreak havoc. I've said for a long time, because of the open border and 20 million people coming across the border and 2 million of those being gotaways, and that there are definitely thousands out of those huge numbers, even though it's a minuscule number, is still thousands of terrorists that came across that mean to do us harm at some point. And we have to pray that God will supernaturally thwart their efforts. I think that's the most likely way that Iran could retaliate and cause actual harm to the United States. I don't think right now, for sure, they don't have the ability to attack us in other ways that we are not able to stop, just like these missiles being shot down where they're trying to hit our base in Qatar. But definitely pray that God intervenes on the sleeper cells, and then that this doesn't draw in Russia and that things don't get escalate, and that this saber rattling that's happening a little bit with some of these folks that are supportive of Iran does not lead to them actually wanting to enter into a fight. That's the other thing I would definitely pray for. And then just wisdom for Trump to know how far to push and when to pull back. Okay, let's go to Philip in Texas. Philip's up next. Phone number is 888-589-8840. Philip, go ahead.
Hey, I just wanted to throw this out there, and I heard this not too long ago, and this was before Saturday, but if you could imagine, as far as like 2020, I believe this is all in God's timing, because if you could see as far as Trump winning 2020, which that would have been great at the time, then he would not have been here at this point in time. And who knows what kind of mess we'd be in now if we were to end up with another Biden or Harris or another person like Obama.
Yeah. Yeah, man. No, you're spot on. I don't think there's any. That's part of why I thought the press conference was so genuine, and his comments about God being so genuine. If there hadn't been the Butler, Pennsylvania assassination attempt, if there hadn't been, the valley that he had to go through, and all of the lawfare and all of the attacks, and You know, that's why, you know, it's so true what it says in James, count it all joy when you experience various trials, because God's using that to make you, in my words, tougher, you know, but essentially make you where you can persevere and you know, be perfect and complete. I'm not saying Trump's perfect and complete, lacking nothing, but that scripture is true. When you go through those tough times, it makes you more prepared for what's coming, and I think that's exactly what happened to Trump. So I think you're spot on. If this had happened even in his first term, it would probably be a different situation. And most certainly, can you imagine if Kamala Harris was president right now and all this was going down? Ugh. Thank you, Lord, for preventing that from happening. All right, let's see. We'll head over to Kentucky. Frank is up next in Kentucky. Frank, go ahead.
Hello, Brother Man. Brother Man, I was wanting to say that the last couple of years before the election for anyway, I wish last couple of years that Frank Gatney. You ever heard of him?
Yeah, yeah, I know Frank. Absolutely, Frank's a great guy.
Well, I wish he was on president on the team, but he's interviewed a lot of people in the past about the equipment for the United States, the armory equipment that they have, and then a lot of the stuff has been laying around. And not sure it works or not, and they shred a lot of armory.
Yeah.
Some of the ships are out of order.
Yeah.
So I wish President Trump would know about that kind of thing, because no one's talking about that at all.
Yeah, no, it's a fantastic question, Frank. Ironic, your name is Frank, but I know you're not Frank Gaffney. But anyway, what you raise is a very important question, and I know Frank Gaffney has been just an absolute expert on this. I've relied on him for a lot of things. Believe it or not, he actually trained me 28 years ago. I went to a candidate school with the Leadership Institute, Morton Blackwell's organization, that's fantastic. And Frank Gaffney was one of the teachers at that candidate school all those years ago. We didn't really strike up a friendship until about 5 years ago. I had seen him at different events around the country, so we kind of knew of each other. But 5 years ago, started going on each other's radio programs. Anyway, I love Frank. He's fantastic. But to your point, yeah, I think that's part of the danger of us getting into a serious long fight, is that we are not as prepared as we used to be. And from Frank's reports and others, potentially very unprepared. Now, I know President Trump is trying to build that back up. It's sort of a Ronald Reagan situation where he came in 1981 and Carter had just decimated the military and decimated our pride and our patriotism and those things. And of course, Biden did the exact same thing. And so President Trump is having to rebuild both of those things, both our patriotism and the actual military might. I think probably the biggest hurdle to that was not so much the physical equipment, even though there's definitely issues there, which you raise is true, but the greater danger was the mindset, the philosophy, the turning the military into this social experiment with DEI and CRT and all the poison of cultural Marxism. And that changed on day one. And then, of course, with Hegseth getting approved and going in, that has been a major change very quickly in terms of the mindset, the mental health of the military, and as Hegseth has said, restoring the warrior ethos. That part is happening rapidly. And, of course, you got a lot of woke nonsense you got to clean out, and that will take time. And you got woke generals and woke people in the brass that you got to get rid of, and that will take time. But it's amazing how fast just from the top down, the good leadership can change things. Just absolutely incredible. Okay, one more quick call. Mary from Kansas, see if we can get this in our final 90 seconds together.
Okay, hi. Listen, on today's issue, after 11 o'clock, they played a soundbite of President Trump, and you could tell it was something that he said, not a speechwriter, that he loved God,
yes,
and he thanked God, and he was thankful for our military. And everything. I can't say it word for word, but
yeah.
I wish you would get with the news guys and get that and maybe play it tomorrow. More people needs to hear that. And Tim and all of them said that was from the heart. That wasn't something somebody wrote for him.
Exactly right. That's exactly what I said. Is that was out of the heart, the mouth speaks, right? And it was so obvious to me in watching that it was, you know, bubbling over. That it was real, it was raw, it was powerful, and not so sure. In fact, I can't remember a president in history being quite like that, and certainly not in my lifetime. So what a blessing. What a blessing. All right, folks, we're out of time for today. I'm Rick Green, been filling in for Walker Wildman today, and I'll be with you again tomorrow. Hope you have a fantastic rest of your day. You've been listening to At the Core with Walker Wildman and Rick Green.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.